This podcast is brought to you by the Eden Pure Thunderstorm Air Purifier. The three-pack is back. The three-pack is a great value, and the top three uses for the air purifier are to eliminate odors, allergens, and air pollutants. Get the three-pack today at EdenPureDeals.com and put in code word Howie3.
The numbers are in. Listeners are voting often and early for Grace Curley, just like they did for her adopted grandfather. From year one to number one.
Make it so, number one.
The Millennial with the Mic is the most listened to midday show in Boston.
We got to bring in a new voice, a young voice, a rising voice, Grace Curley.
You can read Grace's work in the Boston Herald, the Spectator, and the Daily Mail. Now, live from the Aviva Trattoria studio.
Get ready, pal.
It's Boston's number one midday show, The Grace Curley Show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to The Grace Curley Show. We will continue to take your calls throughout the course of the day, but right now we're very excited to welcome our next guest. You all love Libby Emin. She comes on the show quite frequently. Libby, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Grace. Glad to be here.
I'm so glad you're here, but I actually am very sad to read this headline from the Post-Millennial, because it seems like we're living in an alternate universe. I'm going to allow you to explain this to the audience, Libby. But first, let me tell people, it says, breaking, shocking scenes emerge from child-friendly drag show in Dallas gay bar. Child-friendly drag show to me is kind of an oxymoron, because I don't think that drag shows should ever really have kids at them. But explain how this all came to be.
This is a sex show targeted at children. It's called Drag the Kids to Pride. It was organized as part of the Pride festivities of June, which I don't think anyone could be ignorant of the fact that this is Pride Month, with the plethora of logos and rainbows and weird yellow triangles and things everywhere. So that's what happened here. Kelly Neidert actually heard about this. She is a young woman in Texas who organized a protest. She has created the group called Protect Texas Kids, and she organized a protest to head out there. I actually talked to her on the phone yesterday because she reached out to let me know she had organized it. And she organized this protest. She headed out there with her with some of her people. Additional people there protesting. She said that there were actually Antifa protesters there counter-protesting, and that they all got into a bit of an altercation, and that the police ended up being called as well. So that's what's going on. Sex shows for kids, because that's what's progressive.
Yeah, and I want to read a little bit of the description here. This was put up by Mr. Dallas, and it says, our under 21 guests can enjoy a special Mr. mocktail, while the moms and dads can sip on one of our classic mimosa towers. Do you want to hit the stage with the queens? We have 5 limited spots for young performers to take the stage solo or with a queen of their choosing. Come hang out with the queens and enjoy this unique Pride experience, fit for all guests of all ages. So it's not just that the children are going to be in the audience, but they actually want some of these kids to partake in the show, Libby.
Yes, that's correct. And if you look at the videos, you will see drag queens inviting children up to parade around and shake it. There's even some, I'm laughing because it's just so insane. There's even some footage of a drag queen who I believe is someone called Ariel Diamond. This is what Andy Ngo, who's our editor at large, told me. having children shove money into his thong. Shove money into his thong, because that's progressive. What really struck me, and what I was starting to talk about on Twitter, was that if we had a show for kids with strippers, women strippers, shaking it, right, wearing G-strings and pasties and whatever, having kids shove money into her thong, would that be something that is considered progressive and forward-thinking and supportive and affirming and all of these ridiculous words? Would we think that if kids were being invited to exploit women in the exact same way?
No, it would be inappropriate.
It would be inappropriate, right? Yeah, it would be inappropriate. So why is it appropriate to have a man dress up like a woman, fake being, you know, a stripper, like pretend to be an exploited woman, all camped out, this whole thing, and have kids be invited to that? You know, and we've seen the explosion of drag events for kids all over the place. There was at the U.S. Air Force Base in Germany, there was a drag show, not a drag show, drag story hour for kids. Here in New York, the city council, the actual city council, funds drag story hours for kids in schools, public schools, in libraries, and the you know, people in city council who talk about it, as well as the comptroller of the city of New York who funds this, says that this is a way to bring empathy to kids and all of this stuff, to make them feel included. And it's like we've gone from exploiting little girls, sexualizing little girls, which you had a big backlash against, parents saying girls don't need to be sexualized, all this stuff. And now we're just sexualizing all children. We're continuously ushering children into adult sexual lifestyles, kinks, all of these things. And it's, you know, it's marvelously inappropriate, and it's going to destroy civilization.
Yeah, that's the part of it that I think is so important, which is this is a, you know, there's a lot of talk on the left when publications like the Post Millennial will highlight this where, oh, Republicans are overreacting or Republicans are making such a big deal. And then they compare it to other things. But you don't care about gun control, but you don't care about this. But you get so worked up over Drag Time Story Hour. But what you're really pointing out here is this is a problem in our society that is going to have serious ramifications where we're kind of messing with the mindsets and the mental health of these young kids.
Yes, we really, really are. And when you have kids who object to it, and I remember a few years ago, actually, there was a conversation about drag, and this was happening in New York City, which has, you know, already like thoroughly jumped the shark, talking about, you know, bringing kids into this, that it would make them feel more included and all of these things. You know, part of it too was I'm like sort of all over the place because I feel this very deeply. I've been opposed to this for a long time. A good friend of mine, actually, we're not really friends anymore, went to librarian school, got her master's degree in library science, and then began hosting drag shows like the drag story hours at my local library, at which point I stopped bringing, you know, I used to love bringing my son, but I stopped bringing him when it was like drag time at the library, you know. But there was this Facebook post from a parent talking about how she had brought her child to drag story hour at the library, and the child was really freaked out by the guy dressed in garish makeup with fake boobs and like a whole thing. And she was talking about how she was trying to tell her child that it's okay, that it's perfectly okay, and that there's nothing to be freaked out about, right, in sitting on this drag queen's lap and having this drag queen read stories to the child, you know, the like 5-year-old or whatever. Why are we telling kids not to trust their impulses and instincts as regards, you know, stranger danger?
Right.
Why aren't we saying that? Why are we saying like, overcome your stomach turning, you know, your misgivings, 5-year-old, in order to validate the existence and the experience of this fully grown adult who likes to wear women's clothing and read to kids? Why?
Yeah.
Why is it the children's job to affirm and validate these grown-ups and their kinks?
Really well said, Libby. Libby, I want to switch gears here just for a second because there was a shooting on Saturday night in Philadelphia on South Street, and you have an article up at the Post Millennial. Again, everyone can check out Libby's work at, you just go to thepostmillennial.com, and they have, I think you guys really have the most current stories about, you know, everything that's happening in the news. You talked a little bit about the DA in Philadelphia and his response to this shooting. And we're also getting more information about what was leading up to the shooting. Maybe not what led to it, but the circumstances around it beforehand. Can you give us a little update on that?
Yeah. So Larry Krasner is the DA in Philadelphia. There was a shooting on Saturday night on South Street. South Street is a very popular hangout. It's like a, it's a strip. It's in Center City, Philadelphia, sort of the southern sort of border of like the main downtown area. It's where everybody hangs out. There's a diner that I used to hang out at. I went to high school in Philadelphia, and I used to hang out there all the time. I was always hanging out basically exactly where this shooting happened, 3rd and South. There's a lot of, like, there were a lot of punk stores and record stores and old bookstores and all this great stuff. So what it looks like, and Jack Posobiec did a little reporting on this as well, is that there were tons and tons of kids out on Saturday night, which is basically what always happens down there. Tons and tons of kids out. It looks like there were some street brawls and things like that, and that the cops were just kind of hanging out, watching it happen until someone showed up. It looks like 5 handguns were recovered, a lot of casings, and looks like, from what I was looking at this morning, it looks like maybe 5 people were shooting. 3 individuals were killed. And it's, you know, it's, of course, a really tragic situation. Larry Krasner, the DA, came out, and he's been opposed to enforcing the laws on illegal guns, saying that they disproportionately target Black and brown Philadelphians, who also, turns out, are disproportionately targeted by street brawls and random shootings. And so he blamed the NRA. Now, Philadelphia is run by Democrats. The state is run by Democrats. I don't remember the last time a Republican was elected in the city of Philadelphia. So he's blaming somebody else for clearly the failures of his own party in this city.
Yes, I would agree. And it's amazing. He blamed the NRA. And every time Democrats do this, it just shows you that they're unserious about actually trying to make any progress on this front, because it's ludicrous to try to blame the NRA when this kind of awful thing happens. Libby, thank you so much for coming on the show. Where can people follow you on Twitter?
I'm at Libby Emmons on Twitter, and of course at the Post Millennial.
At the Post Millennial, one of my favorite publications. Everyone should check them out. All right, everyone, we'll be back with your calls, 844-500-4242. I also have an update on some of the crime that's occurring in L.A. There was a horrible, horrible attack. A mother was pushing her baby stroller. I actually watched the video over the weekend. It's just stomach turning. And we have more information now about the person who ran this mother over. Somehow, miraculously, she was okay and the baby was okay. But we're going to talk about that. If you listen to my show, you know that Father's Day is coming up. My dad is my hero, and I always want to get him a really good gift. But it's hard, you know, because you don't want to get people stuff they don't need. You want to get someone something they're going to appreciate. And right now, with it being summertime, with inflation being so high, with how hard it is to get food at the grocery store and get what you want, I have the perfect gift for you, and it's really easy to give. It's the Omaha Steaks Dad Wants Steak Package. Father's Day is just around the corner. There is no better gift than Omaha Steaks. So this is what you're going to do. You're going to go to omahasteaks.com, type in Grace in the search bar, and order the Dad's Want Steaks package. Now, let me tell you a little bit about this. For just $99, you are getting so much product, and it's all really good quality. Things like the bacon-wrapped filet mignons, the jumbo franks, the air-chilled chicken breasts, the sweet, delicious caramel apple tartlets. So they also give you a little dessert to finish off the meal. And as a special gift for my listeners, when you type Grace in the search bar and order the Dad's Want Steak package, you'll also get 8 free Omaha Steak burgers. The burgers, Jared, you can attest, yeah, they are to die for.
Had the burgers last week, had the pork chops on Friday. Also excellent. The quality of the meat is fantastic. It's better than what you can get at the grocery store, if you can even find meat at the grocery store.
There's no question. Right, it is way better than what you're getting at the grocery store.
Brought the grill out of the garage. You can do the hot dogs tonight.
These burgers are full of bold, beefy flavor. Give us an update on the hot dogs tomorrow, Jared. Don't wait. Send Dad more than just a gift. Send him an experience he can love and share with the whole family. And it will last him a long time, too, because, again, you're getting so much great stuff. So go to omahasteaks.com, type Grace into the search bar, and order the Dad's Want Steaks package. He'll receive 16 entrees, 4 desserts, plus 8 free Omaha burgers. Again, that's omahasteaks.com. Search word Grace. We'll be right back with your calls, 844-500-4242. This is the Grace Curley Show.
Follow Grace on Twitter at G_Curley.
Grace Curley. She's the cool kid at the lunch table.
I want a hamburger. No, a cheeseburger. I want a hot dog. I want a milkshake. I want potato chips.
You'll get nothing and like it.
This is the Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back. Libby Emmons had made reference to the DA in Pennsylvania and how their soft on crime policies have not led to much success as far as bringing down the rising crime rates. And also what we have here is an update on the Gascon situation that's happening in LA. As a lot of people know, he is in the middle of a really serious recall effort. And there was a case now that's getting a lot of coverage. It's all over the news. You can look at the video on the Daily Mail. Really scary. There was a mother and a baby, and they're walking along the side of the street. And she sees a car coming, and she kind of like specifically moves closer to the wall to get out of the car's way. And the car hit her and the carriage. The carriage flew into the air. She somehow shot up really fast and was able to check on the baby, make sure the baby was miraculously okay. But we're finding out more information about that. And this is from Bill Malugin from Fox, a 16-year-old hit-and-run driver in a stolen car who ran over a mom and child in Venice, was sentenced on Friday to 5 to 7 months in juvie camp. LADA George Gascon office tells me this was an appropriate resolution, but I've learned that he has a prior criminal history. Shocking, right? I'm shocked about this one. Per multiple law enforcement sources, the juvie was on probation and violating it at the time of this hit and run, and he has been previously convicted of felony poisoning after he spiked a teen girl's drink at a high school in 2019, and she was hospitalized. The teen was ordered... This is from Red State. The teen was ordered to serve a mere 5 to 7 months in a probation camp and will have this. This is the part of it that where I just started highlighting, like, oh, my gosh, just when you think it can't get worse, just when you think these DAs can't slap people in the face enough, slap the victims in the face enough with this soft on crime attitude, it gets even worse. 5 to 7 months in probation camp, which, by the way, is less severe than juvenile detention, just in case you were worried about this hit-and-run driver, the 16-year-old. It's a softer version of juvenile detention. Because running someone over with your car and almost killing them and their newborn baby isn't enough to warrant juvenile detention. You need the sugar-coated version. Well, also, he'll have his record expunged when he turns 18. Anything else you guys want to throw in? Anything else you want to give him a job maybe in your office when he's done? Why not?
Oh, I'm sure he'll become an intern at the DA's office.
This attacker didn't even rate juvenile detention. And in a statement to Fox, the victim said, "Someone with a criminal record tried to kill me and my son, and George Gascon thinks that 5 months of camp is a sufficient punishment. His office took the time to falsely comment on my case, but it's taken no time to ask how we're doing. That's because he doesn't care. He and his staff are highlighting their incompetence and their complete disregard for victims." And that is absolutely true. And you see this in so many Democrat-run cities where they have no time. And then in the New York Times, by the way, you are seeing a shift where they write, "Democrats face pressure on crime from a new front, their base. Not long ago, the party was focused on police reform, but rising fears of violence, especially among communities of color, have led candidates to change course." Michael Goodwin from the New York Post had a really good piece on, you know, commenting on this piece in the New York Times. And he laid out how hypocritical they are. He says, "Repeated references to the race of those involved are not incidental, as they reflect a litmus test. If only white voters or white candidates were demanding change, there wouldn't be a story, or at least a sympathetic one. But with non-whites wanting it, the Times is on board and effectively granting permission for Democrats to adopt an anti-crime platform for the fall midterms." If people fall for that from the same people who have been talking about defunding the police for years at this point, if they fall for this quick pivot before the midterms, Well, then I don't know what to tell you. 844-500-4242. We'll be right back with some more updates on Joe Biden and some more sound for you. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Grace Curley Show. Peter Navarro is going to be on with Tucker Carlson tonight. I'll definitely be tuning in for that. And we are going to talk about that in the 2 o'clock hour and just the two different systems of justice that we have in this country right now. I mean, it's never been more apparent. When you look at the Michael Sussman trial and when you look at Flynn's trial and then you see what's happening now with Peter Navarro, I mean, it's really gross how, depending on what political party you belong to, you can get off scot-free or you can be completely ruined. You can be completely ruined by the court systems and by the media. And there's no accountability, there's no repercussions, and it's something that I think is a real danger to our society going forward if we don't figure out a way to restore people's faith in these institutions, because it is crumbling. Ben Weingarten has a good piece on it. There's also a really good piece by Roger Kimball from American Greatness, so we will get into that in the 2 o'clock hour, and plus there's some sound of Peter Navarro, which we will play. But before we get to that, and Jared, we haven't done this in a couple days. Could we have a little bit of journalism in the news?
And now, news.
Very fake news.
I see a lot of excellent journalism being done.
Give me the press.
I'm not sure, to be honest.
How can you ask a question when you don't know the press?
He said that journalists make up stories and make up sources.
As a journalist, I don't really like being the story here.
Very fake news.
And many of your compatriots had to change their reporting and they had to apologize and they had to correct.
This is a golden age of journalism in a lot of ways.
Mr. Biden, Mr. Biden, what flavor did you get?
News.
And now, I am going to get to the Stelter stuff, but I'm saving that for the 2 o'clock hour because that also is about January 6th and that plays into just the double standards that surround us right now in this political atmosphere. And so we're going to save Stelter for the last hour. I don't know if that's a tease or if that's a way for everyone to just click their radios off at once, but it is what
it
is.
Go there.
Now, the Washington Post had a wild weekend on Twitter, on social media. There's a few different stories here, but they're all kind of entangled in the same thing, which is that the Washington Post is the worst. Democracy dies in darkness, according to the Washington Post. Journalism dies at the Washington Post. Integrity dies at the Washington Post. So we have to talk about, where would you like me to start, Jared? Dave Weigel or Taylor Lorenz? You dealer's choice.
Ooh, I'd say Taylor Lorenz.
Taylor Lorenz. Yeah, this is a pretty good one. Now, I am going to have to read a little bit here from the New York Post because it's like the baby formula shortage. The timeline is murky. You know, no one wants to tell me the timing of things, and that, for me, is very suspicious. Taylor Lorenz, for people who don't know her, she is a reporter for the Washington Post. She used to be a reporter at the New York Times, and she's been in trouble multiple times before for lying, for smearing people, for getting her facts wrong, for not issuing corrections, all of the above. And she has a reputation for being a miserable person. I don't say that lightly. She tries to ruin people. She's the same woman, in case you need a refresher. I always remember this because I listened to their podcast. She tried to ruin Pamela Geller's daughters for these like ancient tweets they had, which guaranteed were bad tweets. But she went after them and they got kicked off of their AOL podcast. She's also gone after libs of TikTok. She has made a career she's made a career from going after people she disagrees with and, you know, making it very personal and trying to destroy their livelihoods or, you know, just ruin them on the internet. And it's been pretty successful for her. She was at the New York Times. She left there, I think, because they wouldn't defend her enough for all her bad journalism. She's like Joe Biden. She's mad people aren't going on TV enough to defend her, that they share that in common. And so then she went to the Washington Post. She's also had beef before with like Glenn Greenwald and all these different people. And she went to the Washington Post. She also, this is just one last thing. She did a hit, I believe it was on MSNBC, where she cried about how she gets a lot of criticism and she gets bullied. This is arguably one of the biggest bullies on the internet.
I think she said death threats, too.
Yes, and she had crocodile tears. And then, because the piece was so well received, she got more criticism for the piece, because that's just how likable she came off. The people were like, wow, you are such a phony. And then she got mad at MSNBC for not properly creating this puff piece in a way that portrayed her in a flattering light. It's hard to keep up with all of the ways that Taylor Lorenz has been wronged by her friends in the media. And never at any point, I should mention, does Taylor Lorenz say, perhaps I'm the problem. I find myself in this predicament quite a bit. I've been at the most liberal, left-leaning publications known to man, and yet I'm still getting in fights with my colleagues about how they're not defending me for doing a bad job. And it continues, because she wrote a piece, and there's another aspect of this that's ironic. She wrote a piece about the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial. Try to guess whose side she's on that. Any guesses? Any takers? Yeah. I'm pretty sure she's Team Heard. And she wrote about how YouTubers are making big money off of this. The piece, now I'm reading from the New York Post, which had already been secretly edited after it was published Thursday, detailed how content creators made out big in the sensational Johnny Depp Amber Heard defamation lawsuit that ended last week. I would like to note in here, and I don't think that the New York Post made mention of this, but maybe they did, that the whole incident that got the ball rolling on the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial was an op-ed they published from Amber Heard, where she accused, without saying his name, Johnny Depp of being a domestic abuser. So it's kind of ironic that now the Washington Post is embroiled in yet another scandal, because they started the controversy here by publishing a piece that didn't hold up in the court of law, that jurors didn't believe. But naturally, the Pulitzer Prize winners at the Washington Post, they ate it up. They had no problem with that. So the two YouTubers, Legal Bites, these are just their names, like the YouTube names, and That Umbrella Guy. Just remember those two names. They were singled out in the article. And citing Business Insider, another very reputable source, in case you didn't know, Business Insider, which just so happened to attack Elon Musk for a sexual harassment claim right after he came out and said he was going to acquire Twitter, and more importantly, right after he came out and started criticizing the Biden administration. So let's just all keep this, you know. Just keep all these players in your mind now. Lorenz, citing Business Insider, claimed that Mazika, that's Legal Bites, so I'll just call Mazika Legal Bites, claimed that Legal Bites earned $5,000 in 1 week by pivoting the content of her YouTube channel to nonstop trial coverage and analysis. That Umbrella Guy earned up to $80,000 last month, according to an estimate by social analytics firm Social Blade, Lorenz wrote, adding that, now here's the key. Here's the key for those following along at home. She added that neither YouTuber responded to requests for comment. Now, Legal Bites and That Umbrella Guy, they had a different recollection. They claimed that Lorenz, this gumshoe reporter who knocked on the door of, I think, the family of the Libs of TikTok creator, this is when she wants to, as a reporter had pointed out when the Ted Cruz Cancun debacle was going on, when these reporters want to be, they can be Bob Woodwards. They can be showing up. What breed of dog does Ted Cruz have, and who was giving it water? Was the water fresh? They can really be Inspector Gadget when they put their minds to it, Lorenz included. But when they don't want to find out information, they're also really great at that. So now they're claiming, no, she never reached out to us for comment. Lorenz, though, she wasn't satisfied with just one mistake. And I'm using air quotes because I think the mistake was pretty purposeful. All these mistakes go one way, you might notice. Lorenz also made a second error, wrongly attributing a statement to Depp's representative, Adam Waldman. Now, although a note at the bottom of the article acknowledged her story was updated to clarify comments made during Waldman's testimony, the claim that Lorenz had reached out to YouTubers for comment was deleted without acknowledgement. It was deleted after these people went online and said she never reached out to us for comment. Then she went in, or whoever, her editors, who she's now throwing under the bus because it's Taylor Lorenz, they went in, they deleted this sentence about how she had reached out to these people for comment and they didn't give her a comment. They went in and edited that. And then minutes later, she reaches out for comment. Says, do you guys want to add anything? Hi, do you guys want to add anything? After Fox News published a story about the stealth edit, the Washington Post issued a correction at the bottom of Loren's report. A previous version of this story inaccurately attributed Adam Waldman a quote describing how he contacted some internet influencers. That quote has been removed. The story has been amended to note that the Post's attempt to reach a Light Mazika and that umbrella guy for comment, previous versions omitted or inaccurately described these attempts. The Post later followed with an even lengthier editor's note posted at the top of Lorenz's piece, though neither correction addressed who had edited the story after it was published. When Fox News asked specifically whether Lorenz herself made the stealth edit, a Post spokesperson said, that's not something we discuss on the record. In other words, sources and methods. We can't jeopardize the investigation. The YouTuber slammed Lorenz's article. This says I didn't respond to request to comment. I know I've gotten a lot of emails over the past 2 months, but I've double checked for your name, Taylor Lorenz, and I see no email from you. Also, I didn't suddenly pivot. I started covering this before the trial. There's also a lot of stuff that was also wrong about this piece, but the funniest part was after the piece was already published, Lorenz reached out to them for comment, which is, you know, that is journalism in 2022. And one of these YouTubers wrote, the Washington Post also flagrantly misrepresented my earnings report and needs to correct it. Social Blade says I made between $4,000 and $79,000. They added to the highest estimate over-reporting for dramatic effect. Yeah. And none of this is surprising, but it is amusing. It is amusing because this is the Washington Post and no one gets fired. Nobody gets in trouble. And so Brian Stelter starts commenting on it, and Taylor Lorenz starts bashing Brian Stelter. He's the bad guy. Any reporters who come out and say, yeah, this is sloppy work, they're attacking her. They're running a smear campaign. It's amazing. And then just on a side note, Dave Weigel, he got in trouble last week because he retweeted a tweet where it said, all women are bi, it's either sexual or polar. He didn't make the tweet. He retweeted the tweet. And there was big brouhaha at the Washington Post because they don't care if a reporter is just flagrantly lying about the facts of the story and about reaching out to the subjects of the story who she's smearing. They don't care about that. But if you retweet a joke that other reporters don't think is funny, watch out. There's going to be an investigation the likes of which you have never seen. And we're not going to protect you for sources and methods during this investigation. And Howie mentioned to me something I had forgotten, and I was actually embarrassed that I forgot this because my Rolodex is usually pretty good with these media hacks. Dave Weigel, according to Howie Carr, is the same guy who, during a Trump rally, tweeted out a photo of like a half-empty event and to make it seem to imply that Trump wasn't bringing in people to the seats. And it was because he got there 3 hours earlier and tweeted out a fake picture. I'll make sure I get all the facts right on that, but it's hysterical that he's going to get in more trouble for retweeting a joke than he is for pulling a Lorenz and lying about a story. Jeff Bezos must be so proud. 844-500-4242. We'll be right back with your calls. This is The Grace Curley Show.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. Start the afternoon off right.
Now what? Here comes a girl. Here she is. This is just the best part of my day.
It's Grace Curley.
I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Dr. Houghton of Perfect Smiles is a superb architect. When it comes to dentistry, he's the best at what he does. He fixes your teeth and your smile, but what he really does is he builds the self-confidence of his patients. When you have a smile that you're proud of, it builds confidence in your professional life and in your personal life. The better you look, the better you feel, and that helps every aspect of your life, every interaction you have daily. If you're not afraid to smile, like every part of every other part of your life becomes so much easier. It's a new year and you have the opportunity to make 2022 the year for a new you. If you've thought about Perfect Smiles but never called, now's the time. Call Perfect Smiles in Nashua, New Hampshire. They're conveniently located off Route 3, really easy, right off the highway. Plenty of parking. Everyone there is awesome. You can reach them at PerfectSmiles.com. That's PerfectSmiles.com. Change your smile. Change your life. Jared, I have another update for you that I'm not sure if you've read about. There's a lot of gossip lately about the Biden family, and this one comes from the Daily Mail. Now, the Daily Mail, they've been busy. The Jubilee is ending, which I'm sure they're sad about because it was nonstop coverage. Did you see any of the videos of the Jubilee, Jared?
I saw the video of Lewis, right? The little boy that threw the tantrum.
Yes.
He's my favorite royal now.
I saw the video.
I know nothing about any of it, but he's my favorite.
I saw the video of the queen on the balcony when everyone was just like going nuts, singing, waving flags. It was pretty cool. So the most people I've seen together in a very long time.
I remember the days when you used to be able to like your leaders.
Yeah, the good old days.
Salad years.
As we like to call them, the before times. Joe Biden refuses to provide security for Hunter's love child, Navy Joan.
Yay, children.
This is an exclusive from the Daily Mail. Callous Joe Biden refuses to provide security for Hunter's mini-me, Navy, despite being made aware that his three-year-old granddaughter and her mom, London Roberts, were threatened by angry cage fighter X. Say what you will about Hunter, but this guy has like a soap opera style life.
I'm sorry, could you say that last sentence again?
I know, it was a lot, wasn't it? There was a lot of descriptors. Joe Biden refuses to provide security for Hunter's mini-me Navy, despite being made aware that his three-year-old granddaughter and her mom, London Roberts, were threatened by angry cage fighter X.
Okay.
The president frequently talks about his love and pride for his grandchildren, but if he really cared, he would have done something by now, Roberts' friend said. I agree. I think it's very strange how he always talks about his grandkids and, you know, a lot of these puff pieces write about how, you know, he leaves them long voicemails. Call me back. It's Pop. Call me back. And yet he has this granddaughter who's 3 years old who they just don't acknowledge at all.
Maybe they should. Navy is the granddaughter, right?
Yes.
Maybe they should just bring Navy to the local high school. Her dad may have left the gun there.
Well, that's the other part of this issue is that now what we're hearing is that senators are going to make some headway on this bipartisan gun reform bill. And they seem to be coming to a solution of sorts. And maybe it's a compromise. I did read about school security in there, which I think would be great. I'm sure there's going to have to be some give and take on both sides. Chris Murphy, the Democrat senator, said he knows he's not going to get everything he wants. And as much as I'm not sure the things the Democrats want to do will improve the situation greatly, I would love to see a bipartisan something come together because it's really starting to freak me out how polarized we've become. Where immediately when something horrible happens, Chuck Schumer starts screaming about how Mitch McConnell, how many children will be enough. I mean, it's so dishonest to try to say that when something like this happens, that either side isn't horrified by it. So I would like if these senators could come together for something. 844-500-4242. But my point being is that a lot of people have pointed out Joe Biden's speech on gun control didn't only not move the ball forward at all. He could have hurt these senators' chances because he made it. He tried to vilify Republicans yet again. And if this guy's going to talk about gun control and if he's going to talk about punishing people who aren't responsible gun owners, then the first person he should go after is Hunter Biden, the artist, the locomotive expert, the smartest guy he knows, his son.
I probably smoke more Parmesan cheese than anyone.
But that won't happen, of course. Today's poll question is brought to you by Omaha Steaks, the best and most mouthwatering steaks you'll ever have. Go to omahasteaks.com. Just type in Grace into the search bar and order the Dad's Want Steaks package. You'll receive 16 entrees, 4 desserts, and 8 free Omaha burgers. That's omahasteaks.com. Search word Grace. Just go to omahasteaks.com and check it out. Jared, what's the poll question and what's the results thus far?
Who do you trust the least? The Biden administration, the FBI, the experts, or Democrats?
The Biden administration is a combination of every faction of the swamp. So I'm going with the White House.
32% say the Biden administration, and in the lead at 41%, Democrats.
All right, we're talking January 6th and Peter Navarro when we come back. Don't go anywhere. We'll take your calls. It's the Grace Curley Show.